Speak with power, lead with presence, build your confidence. Meet Central Florida's charisma coach. Welcome to the Mary Gardner Show. Now, here's Mary.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Mary Gardner Show. I am Mary Gardner, and I am so excited that you're here spending a little time with me today. I always hope to uplift you on the days that we're able to get together, and I hope that you are enjoying your day and making somebody else feel good today. And what I love to do at this show is to elevate leaders and inspire greatness and remind you that your story matters. But today we're going to talk about something phenomenal that we all need to expect in our life. We're talking about miracles, not the kind that fall out of the sky, but the kind that are created and the kind that happen when someone believes in you before you believe in yourself. And in coaching, that's what we do. We can see opportunity. But what if opportunity could come at any moment? And what if your greatest breakthrough was waiting on someone simply giving you a chance? And what if you are the miracle in someone else's life? Well, today I'm joined by a really good friend, Coach Jim Johnson, who's the author of A Coach and a Miracle, the incredible true story of J-Mac. He was a young man with autism who was the team manager at a high school basketball team for years until one unforgettable night when Coach put him in the game. And what happened next stunned the world. An ESPY Award, national television, meeting his hero, Kobe Bryant. And that moment still inspires millions 20 years later. But before there was a miracle, there was a coach. And today we're going to talk about how miracles are built. Welcome to the show, Coach Jim Johnson. Great to see you.
Thanks,
great
Mary.
To have you.
I'm looking forward to it. It should be a lot of fun.
It is going to be a lot of fun. Now, Coach, we're going to talk about J-Mac and the miracle and that excitement. But before there was J-Mac, there was you. And you have been a longtime teacher. You were a coach. And you were shaping young men way before that famous game. So let's start in the beginning. Is it championships? Is it discipline? Or is it belief? Walk us back to your early years and who coached you? How did you grow up? How or who taught you about leadership in your life?
Well, it really started with my family. I had great parents, and ironically, my father unfortunately lost last year or a year ago, but he was my high school basketball coach. So he was really my number one mentor, playing sports as a kid, and then being my high school basketball coach was a real privilege. I learned a lot from my dad, and it really inspired me. I wanted to be an outstanding athlete. I ended up being a pretty good athlete, not as good as I was hoping. I obviously would like to play in the NBA as a basketball player, but that didn't happen. But I really wanted to follow my dad's footsteps, and I ended up choosing the same profession, although he went into administration later in his career, but mm-hmm. I stayed as a teacher and coach for 35 years. So
wow.
It's something I truly loved, and building and shaping young men is something I took great pride. But it took me a while. You know, at first, you know, you ask about is it championships? I think when I first got in, I really wanted to, win games and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I really started to understand what leadership is all about. Mm-hmm. Leadership is about helping people reach their dreams and doing that and trying to build a team that, you build this great culture that they want to be part of and that they feel like they belong.
Yeah.
And so really, as I shaped, we created a mission statement for my last two programs, and our goal was to help young people become winners on and off the court. And then as the leader, you got to be the CRO, the chief reminding officer.
I love that.
We are sharing, what are the behaviors to be a winner on the court? Because winning the game is part of that, but are you a great teammate? Are you someone that can handle adversity? You know how to set goals and reach for things you don't believe you can do? And then off the court, are you someone that's a contributing member to our community? Are you someone that does their best academically?
Yeah.
So those are things we were trying to teach on a daily basis by being a varsity basketball coach.
Okay, so you were a varsity basketball coach. And from the sound of it, you are like at the top, which we know that you got there because you won championships and whatnot. But take us back, because people that are learning those skills, it doesn't all come naturally. And sometimes it takes time. And a lot of people get into coaching because they were a good athlete. And there's a transition from being an athlete into being a coach where you actually care more about the person than just championships, because you're not always going to win championships. But when did you realize that coaching was more than just wins?
I think it was really after I became a head coach at 25 years old. We did very poorly. We won one game, and they actually let me go after 1 year. So it was a pretty humbling start to my varsity coaching. But I got a mentor the next year. I coached for a junior college with this guy named Bill Van Gundy. And Coach Van Gundy, ironically, is both his sons have been head coaches in the NBA. One was my age and one was younger. But he really taught me about, you know, that coaching is giving these young men direction and discipline and how, you know, how to teach the game of basketball, but teach the game of life and building that culture day in and day out. So that's really when I started to change, and I started to really study leadership. You know, I started to read a lot. One of my most impactful books was Dr. Covey's 7 Habits of Effective People. And that's really got me thinking about, you know, what is my personal mission? What should our team mission? And, you know, and then coming up with core values and what are the behaviors for those values. And so I really started to, I love basketball, and I studied basketball, you know, and trying to learn new plays and the new skills and all that. But at the same time, if you're going to be a great coach, you got to know the skills of the particular game you're going to be.
Yeah.
But the other important thing is you have to understand how to be a leader. You're absolutely right. Because you're a great athlete does not make you a great
coach.
That's
right. Doesn't make you a great coach. And you think about all the things you're dealing with at a high school level. Think about those parents that are like, get out there, yelling at their kids and wanting their kid to be the best. And hey, it's not always the way it is. And what do you do if you're a coach and you see that maybe the parent is putting so much pressure on a kid and you're like, geez, man, he just doesn't have the talent, you know, and he's being driven. Right. I mean, how do you handle all those things? Because it's more than just wins. It's more than just discipline. There's so much psychology involved with coaching.
Oh, absolutely. And I think working the mental. So I think it starts by getting to know your players. And as the parents realize that you are in for more than just winning games, in my case, basketball, and, you know, you really want to help mold their sons to be the best that they can be. I think they start to build that relationship with you that, you know, you're more into it, you know, and trying to help these young people become better people, better leaders of themselves so they can lead and be a real positive impact in the community. So, so it really starts with building relationships with the young people and then, you know, expanding that out. You know, we had parents meeting, you know, where we'd go over our expectations and clarity of communication and making sure that you're communicating both to the players and to the families.
Did you ever have to go back to some of those parents and say, now, do you remember that meeting that we had? And we're not going to be screaming and yelling. I mean, how did you handle that? I'm always
curious. Absolutely. You know, someday those are tough conversations sometimes that you had to get involved with. But yes, without a doubt, you know, that it was really important. And it was really important for me and something I didn't realize the impact. I'll tell you a very quick story. Mm-hmm. One of the requirements we asked our players is that when we would travel to another school, that you have to wear a shirt and tie.
Oh.
And one time I didn't wear a shirt and tie. And I got called out by a parent and said, Coach, you've always talked about being an excellent model. Why don't you have a shirt and tie? And they were absolutely right. And I said, you're right. I'm wrong.
Wow.
And I always wore a shirt and tie from there. But what the other side of that is, I was really talking, you know, I need to be a great model. But so, you know, I encourage the parents, you got to be a great model for your sons as well.
Oh, I love that. That's so good. Holding them to a higher standard actually is, you know, the kids are watching their parents too. And so I see so many parents that drive their kids. And I was a swim coach for a while. And but what do you do, like, if you see that the parent is yelling a lot and then the kid isn't showing any potential? How do you handle that?
So, you know, I think it starts with continuing to build a relationship with the player. And then certainly, you know, sometimes you got to bring the parent in and say, you know, these are the things I'm seeing. I want to see what's best for your son. You know, and then the other thing that you really talk to the players about is that not everyone's going to be the star.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things I really encourage our players is be great in your role. Mm. Your role might be a, you know, you are the star of the team, but in most cases you're not.
Yeah.
But you may be a starter, or you may be someone that plays off the bench, or you may be someone that doesn't play much at all.
Yeah.
But those all are important. And great, and you know, J-Mac was a great example. There was a young man, he tried out for our team 3 consecutive years, never made it, but
aww,
he always was thinking of the team first. And I think that's one of the things as a coach,
wow,
is bringing the right people. One of our characteristics we were looking for, and we made mistakes, but it was, we really made it clear that we wanted we over me people. You know, that
we over me?
We over me.
I love that. We over me.
Yeah.
That's a great thing. That should be in every family, every classroom, yeah, every sports. I love that. Now, Coach, did you always feel responsibility to those quiet ones? And we just have about a minute left. Or the ones that were overlooked. Did you encourage them more? Is that what a good coach does? Because I know that when my kid was out there, I told my coaches for my son, look, he needs a little extra attention. So do you do that,
yeah,
when it's needed?
Oh, absolutely. I think that's one of the things that I encourage leaders, and I try to really focus in on getting to know each player, and, you know, that including have a one-on-one, we have,
yeah,
the goal meetings, and really, you know, getting to know them, and even at team meetings, we would do some exercise to get to know each person a little bit better and try to make the team closer. And really, you know, I always say, to be a leader, I think you got to be caring. And you also got to be, as you build that connection, you've also got to be challenging them.
Amen. Amen. That's right. Exactly. We are talking to Coach Jim Johnson, the author of Coach and a Miracle, about J-Mac, the autistic boy who had a miracle. And we'll be back in just a couple of minutes. And one day that belief is going to become opportunity. And all of us should expect miracles in our life. We'll be right back. We're going to take a commercial break and then wait for the rest of the exciting story with Coach Jim Johnson.
Where voice meets vision. Welcome back to the Mary Gardner Show. Now let's get back into the studio. Here's Mary.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. We're talking to Coach Jim Johnson. He's the author of Coach and a Miracle, and we're talking about the miracle that happened with J-Mac. And J-Mac was a boy. His name was Jason McElwain. He was the team manager of the high school basketball team. He was a lover of basketball. He had autism, and he came every day, and he practiced every single day. He never complained. He never quit. He was one of those that Coach said just showed up, and he put we before me. I love that. But, Coach, tell us about J-Mac. He became very famous, but what was he like as a young man?
Yeah, so he tried out for our junior varsity as a 10th grader. And my JV coach came to him and said, this young man, he's on the autism spectrum. He's very small in stature. He's not a very good player. But, man, Coach, he's got a big heart. And he not only loves basketball, but he wants to be part of this team. He's a we over me guy. So, you know, my JV coach took him in as the JV team manager. So he was going to practice every day with them. And the way I got to know him, in fact, I tagged him the nickname J-Mac because I couldn't pronounce his last name. In fact, his last name was a misdemeanor. I would have been on death row. Fortunately,
yeah,
when I asked him about J-Mac, he liked it, so his name stuck. But so his sophomore year, I just got to know him through, because the varsity and JV usually play back-to-back, so he would sit on the bench for both games. But then where I really got to know him more closely is between his sophomore and junior year. He started going to all our off-season workouts, and I would pick him up at his house. And we were always talking basketball, and we started to build this really nice bond. So he tried out again his junior year for the varsity, the team I coached, and didn't make it.
Oh, that must have been crushing to have to tell him no.
It was really tough. And then so he didn't make the team, but he at that point, Mary, I was kind of known as the coach that couldn't win the big one. We would have really good winning seasons, but then we'd lose in our postseason tournament.
Mm.
In fact, it was funny. At our first team meeting, Jason's junior year as our varsity team manager, he raised his hand when I walked in the room. I said, yes, J-Mac. He says, Coach, we know you've never won the Section 5 championship. And I paused and I said, well, thank you, Jason.
Yeah, thanks for the reminder. Yeah.
But he said, this year, you know, we know you love slogans, and we're going to adopt this slogan, stay focused, and we're going to help you win your first sectional championship. We had another great season. We got to the semifinals now for the sixth time in my career in the postseason tournament, and we lose at the buzzer to our crosstown rival. And I was devastated. And in fact, I kind of lost it at home. My wife had never seen that. I was thinking I wasn't the right person. But it reminded me about my passion and mission. And I got back on it. And the thing that inspired me is Jason now comes to everything again, trying to make the team as a senior. And when he tries out his senior, I told him, I got some good news and some bad news. And he says, Coach, tell me the bad news. And I said, well, unfortunately, you're not quite good enough to make the team.
Yeah.
And this time he was really upset. He had dropped down. He was almost crying. I said, Jason, I do have some good news. And his head popped back up. And he said, yeah, Coach. And I said, well, for senior night, that was our final home game where we honor all the seniors before the game.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you a uniform and hopefully get you.
Oh.
He was pretty excited about that. Like, I get people that periodically he would ask me about the uniform during the season. Of course, I define periodically as about three hours a day. Well, his senior year, we were expected to have a really good team, and we started out 2-0, and then adversity struck, and it divided the team. It's too long of a story.
Yeah.
It shared all in my book, A Coach, A Miracle. And it took us a while to get back, but finally we got the team turned around somewhat, and we went on a winning streak, won 8 out of our last 9 games.
Oh, man, that's so great. All right, so I want to, so in how you're talking about, he seems so normal, and I want to just take a pause and talk a little bit about autism, because I'm very familiar with autism. And so it sounds like he was totally normal. He was in a normal school and he was participating and you know, he was small. But how does did autism affect him socially and his confidence where you are communicating? Was he stuttering? I mean, tell me how he manifested autism.
The biggest thing that I saw is he would perseverate on things. And the other thing that was when he was communicating, if he wasn't interested in what you were talking about, he would just talk about something totally different.
Okay.
And he would go off on tangents where, you know, if you got to know him, you would understand him better. But he, you know, like if we were talking about, you know, World War II, you know, he didn't like it, World War II. So he'd say, hey, did you know yesterday what happened in practice? So he would completely change the subject and talk about something he was interested in.
Yeah.
And he would also start sometimes talking about things that people really, you know, as you got to know him better, you would understand a little bit better. But he spoke clearly. He didn't have any stutter.
So there, because I have a little knowledge, there are different things on the spectrum. So having no filter is one of those things. Talking at you instead of with you, so you're just talking and not listening at all.
Yep.
And you do, sometimes they just get stuck on one topic and talk about it over and over and over. They don't seem to have the social cues. Sarcasm and things like that, they don't pick up on. And so every one of them has different techniques or different characteristics of autism. And so if somebody is socially awkward, that might be a quick time. But let's go back to the game, because that was really, this was the final home game. You had 4 minutes left. You decide to put him in. And then what made you say yes in that moment? Tell the story.
Well, you know, because he was so loyal to our team that I wanted to give him a gift. And the gift was that I wanted to get him in the game. And my dream was I wanted to see if he could score a basket. I thought if he would score a basket, that's a memory he'll cherish for the rest of his life.
Yeah.
So we put him in with just over 4 minutes to go. His first time, first of all, it was really cool because what I didn't know and what Jason didn't know, one of our parents made all these pictures of Jason's face and put them on paint. Like a placard, and gave him to our student body. So when Jason entered the court for the first time, they gave him a standing ovation that showed those pictures. And I got so overwhelmed with emotion, Mary, I sat down and started to cry. Tears were rolling down. I was profoundly touched.
Oh.
He's now in his first game. First time we come down on the offensive end, and one of his teammates throws it to him in the right corner, and he's behind the three-point arc. He lets it go, and I kind of gaze around everyone in the gym. We had about close to 1,000 people there.
Wow.
They stood up in anticipation, and Marriott missed this by like 6 feet. And you know I'm a person of faith, but you're not supposed to pray in the public schools, but I was praying, dear God, please help him get one basket.
Amen. You were praying. Oh, my gosh. That's so wild. Yeah, that's great.
So then the next possession, he comes down. He has a much shorter shot from about 10 feet away. He lets it go, and this time it hits the backboard.
So he misses two first shots. Okay, so he's missed two.
So he at least hit the rim on the second shot.
Okay.
And then the third shot was another three-pointer, and this time, magic. It goes in, and the place erupts.
I
must be a basketball fan. Not only has J-Mac scored, he's got a three-pointer. He ain't better than this, right? Wrong.
And then and it
turned into his idol was the late Kobe Bryant. And I kid you not, I want to fast forward 6 months and I'll finish the game very quickly, is that 6 months after that, Jason's at the ESPY Awards. He's up for the greatest sports moment of the year, and there's four finalists, and one of the other finalists is his idol, Kobe Bryant. Kobe has scored 81 points in the game for the Lakers that year. So Jason meets his idol and then beats him out for the ESPY.
Oh my gosh.
He beats him out because he didn't just make one three. He comes down, he makes another three. Then he makes a shot where his foot's on the line, so then he gets two. And then he missed a couple, and the place is just in pure bedlam.
Oh, my gosh.
And the two things to close is with a minute to go, Mary, I'm sitting on the bench, you know, tears still rolling down my face. I cannot believe what I'm witnessing. And I get a tap on my shoulder. I'm shocked. I look behind me, it's Jason's mother, and Mary, she's bawling her eyes out. She whispers in my ear, Coach, this is the best gift you could ever give my son.
Of course,
Mary, I cried harder. I was so touched. And then this is how the game ends. Spencer Port, our opponent that night, and I want to give kudos to their coach and their players. They were really good sports. But they score with about 10 seconds to go, and our player that takes it out of bounds, he usually throws to our point guard, but he threw it right to J-Max. And J-Max doubling down, and I thought they were just going to let him go in to make a short shot, a layup. Oh, no, he, like, slows down, and he shoots a shot about 2 feet behind Eric, almost an NBA three. And I'm thinking, Jason, don't shoot from there. You're going to ruin the moment.
Oh, my God.
He launches the rainbow. Swish. I look over Mary, and the whole gym runs on the floor, and our players put him up on their shoulders, and I'll never forget, because I had no idea how many points he scored. And our public address announcer comes on and says, the leading scorer for Greece Athena tonight, J-Mac, with 20 points.
20 points in 4 minutes. 20 points in 4 minutes. And look at that miracle that happened so quickly. That was a bit. Did you see J-Mac's face?
Yeah, you know, he was covered. The one thing that's funny, because we, you know, we have on video, is his mother and father have an interesting dynamic from size. His mother's 5'2" and his dad is 6'6".
Oh my god!
The funny thing is, when everybody ran the court, his mother ran on, and she had this green sweatsuit on, and she's like bobbing and weaving. She got to Jason, and then after that, everybody, our players, just grabbed him and gave him a big hug. So I didn't get to see him right away because they were actually putting him up on their shoulders, and he had the game ball over his head, and he was just like in shock, you know.
Were they hitting you up? Did you run out on the court?
I didn't run out as fast as everybody else because I just kind of tried to take it all in.
Yeah,
you know? I didn't want to take away from Jason. You know,
that
it was just such a beautiful moment to see how the crowd and then our team embraced him.
And the crowd round. Ran out on the court too.
The whole.
Oh my god!
You know, there was probably 900 to 1,000 people there, and everybody was down on the gym floor, and it was just like a big celebration.
Like a highlight of his life, really.
Yeah.
And also all the students to get to know they participated and got to see such a miracle that happened.
Yeah.
So it wasn't just scoring. This was dignity, and that was belonging, and that was years of quiet faith meeting opportunity. We are talking to Coach Jim Johnson about the miracle of J-Mac, the autistic boy who, on the last 4 minutes of the game, hit four or several, got 20 points, and became the ESPY Award winner and beat his idol, Kobe Bryant. So stay right with us. We're going to talk about how the world went crazy in just a few minutes. We'll be right back with Coach Jim Johnson, the author of A Coach and a Miracle, the story of J-Mac. Back in a moment.
Your greatest impact is still ahead. Welcome back to the Mary Gardner Show. Here's Mary.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Mary Gardner Show. And I'm talking to Coach Jim Johnson. One of the reasons why I just love what I'm doing is getting to share some phenomenal stories with my audience. And I think we're living in such a difficult world right now where so many people are being persecuted for their beliefs and they're having a hard time either with health or whatever. And there's so much loneliness and depression. And to be able to bring some uplifting, phenomenal stories, especially something like this, a miracle of the story of J-Mac, who actually got a shot at a miracle and coach let him get in a game. It was the last game of the season, and J-Mac hit several three-pointers and got 20 points for the game, and the crowd went crazy. And so tell us about how the world found out. How did they respond? I know you told us he got an ESPY award, but tell us kind of a little bit about aftermath.
Sure. So after the game, I felt I did it in my heart for all the right reasons. I didn't have any media there, but back then you had to call it into our local newspaper. It was called the Democrat and Chronicle. And I called in, and they usually put a little story in the box score. And, of course, I was all fired up because our team manager now scored 20 points. And yeah. I thought for sure he would get a headline. And the next day when I opened up the sports page, we got a headline, but it said, Greece Athena ties for league title. And it mentioned a little bit about Jason, but they didn't make much of a deal out of it. I will say the next day, Mary, I was still a teacher at the school, and I didn't do much teaching. We watched the game film over and over, and kids were crazy and said, Coach, this is going to get an ESPN. I said, ESPN? It isn't going to headline the local Democratic Chronicle. But what I didn't know, Jason's speech pathologist, he had worked with Jason for 4 years, and he had never come to a game, but he came to the game. Wow. And he was so touched that the next day he called one of the TV stations and said, you to come and borrow the video from the coach. And they did. And, gave it to them, and they showed it that night. And the next day we had all the local TV, I think there were three or four TV stations, come to the school. Oh, wow. And then one of the sports directors asked if he could send it out nationally. And within a few days, our phones were ringing off the hook.
Oh, my gosh. That is so crazy.
Crazy. Yeah. My wife, one day I came home and she says, hey, Oprah's show called the house.
Are you kidding me? You were on Oprah. Oh, my gosh. And how did the ESPY Award come about?
So the ESPY Awards, they just reached out to them. I did not attend. I was not invited to that. But his mom and dad won them with him. It's out in California.
Oh, wow.
And they actually tape it. So it's actually, we knew he had won the ESPY.
That he was going to win when he went out there?
So they announced it. But then when they actually do the show, I don't know if they do it live now, but back then they did not do it live. So, they videoed the show, and then he came back home, and then it came on TV a couple weeks. So we met at a restaurant, and a bunch of us watched it together. And so it was pretty cool from that perspective.
Oh, my gosh. Did you have any idea it was really going to go that far? I mean, millions saw, and especially like Oprah. You were on Oprah.
Oh, no. I mean, absolutely not. I mean, I guess I'll tell you a quick side story. So after that season, Jason and his dad and I were invited to the Final Four in Indianapolis by a company, and I actually spoke to the company there, and they treated us, they brought us to all the games, and we stayed in Florida that won the national championship there. We stayed in their hotel, and we had dinner with them, and it was just a really beautiful experience. But the crazy thing is when we landed in Indianapolis, we get greeted by the company, one of the people from them, and two off-duty police officers. And I said, what are you guys doing here? I said, where's your security? Well, they didn't know me. But when we'd walk around the community, people go, that's that kid for homeless boys. Because we were on TV a lot, and so it was pretty wild experience. But that's when it really hit me, like, a lot of people have seen that.
No, how did he handle all this attention? I mean, a lot of times children or kids or people that are on the spectrum get overwhelmed. So how did he handle all of the attention?
You know what? Overall, I'd say pretty well. There was moments that he had challenges because it was overbearing. And the thing, though, with him, because he would, really focus in on certain things, is, the beautiful thing for Jason was that he had to go back and be our team manager for our postseason tournament, and he embraced that. And it was all about the team. And we ended up winning our first championship that year. So that was pretty crazy. In fact, in the championship game, we play in arena. It seats about 10,000. But usually we get about 4,000 or 5,000. But because of all the attention, Mary, we walked into the arena. It was sold out. There were 10,000 people there.
Are you serious?
And we ended up railing and winning the game and winning our first championship. So it was... you know, it was such a memorable year after having such a difficult beginning to it. And then, you know, after that, we started getting invited to all things. And we were on Good Morning America.
Oh, my gosh. And remind me what city you were in and what high school.
So I live in the largest suburb of Rochester called Greece, like the country.
Okay.
And so that's and we actually have four high schools in our town. I grew up in the town and and one of the school's name was Greece Athena.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so let's go back. You were going to ABC. Now that's a lot. Was it live or was it taped in case something happened, nerves or anything?
Yeah, most of the things we were on, you know, some were taped, some were live. Like ESPN came in and they did like this little 5-minute documentary that got kind of viral, and that's something that I often show at the beginning of my presentations. And it was really well done. But there was a lot of like Steve Hartman came to our school and from TV, and they did a pretty nice show on it as well. And it was we had a Japanese TV station come to the school.
It
was pretty crazy.
Now, how did this change your guys' life?
Well, you know, I mean, the wild thing was because we ended up playing for 2.5 more weeks before we lost. We lost in the state tournament. Mm-hmm. And so during that time, because it just had gotten so much publicity, the phones were ringing off the hook until when we lost, that's when everybody kind of quieted back down. But it was like, I want to say 17, 18 days where literally we were getting dozens of calls every day. And, you know, I was on radio talk shows and stuff. They gave me a sub at the school for 8 consecutive school days. And so while we were still playing, because it was just overwhelming for everybody. But so, you know, they always say it's your 15 minutes of fame. I guess we got a little bit longer than that.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. No, I could only imagine. And then so was the local town. Did they, you know, sometimes they even say Jesus wasn't even popular in his hometown. So did anything happen locally? Did they celebrate him, give him a key to the city? Was there anything that like that went on for him?
Yeah, I think he did after, I think, like the next year, he got the key to the city. Aww. And we got our town. Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of really neat things that were, you know, that the community did. And it was special for sure.
That's amazing. I mean, if you had never put him in, just think of all the things that would have been lost. And I know, Coach, that you're a speaker. You've been coaching and speaking now for a long time on leadership. And it's 20 years since that magical moment of J-Mac. I would love to hear what that moment continues to teach you.
You know, it's interesting, Mary, because I write a weekly blog, and I just wrote this week about some of my reflections of what I learned. And, you know, there's a few, but one that just jumped out to me was the power of perseverance and how Jason just never gave up on his dream. And, and because he has so much passion for basketball. Mm. And the other thing is when you get an obstacle like Jason did, where he kept getting cut for the team, he found another way to serve. Mm. And I think that's a really neat thing, because we always think, you know, that, you know, the example, you know, you want to be an actor, and you get a lot of stumbling blocks, and then you decide, well, maybe I can be the director, or maybe I can be someone that does the video, or, you know, there's a lot of different roles that you can still be something you're passionate about. And that's something I really learned from Jason, that he really embraced his roles. You know, from the team manager, he was going to be the best manager. And when he got his shot, and I guess the last thing I'll say is I call it carpe diem, the ability to seize the day. What people didn't realize is all the extra hours Jason spent on his game, and those, what I call the unseen hours. You know, he'd come before practice, day after, he'd shoot in his driveway, he'd go to our local Y. So he was getting ready for, you know, when his chance came, that he was going to be able to seize the day. And then I guess the last thing I'll say court. I never asked them to pass to Jason the ball. You know, we talk about teamwork every day during practice, but to me it was the essence because out of their own hearts, they decided that we were going to pass the ball and shine the light on Jason on every possession, and that just touched my heart deeply.
That is so humbling, and that is so nice. And just hearing you talk about perseverance and then embracing your role, and those are things that each one of us can do. Because I've realized by coaching people, because I coach people in their influence and writing books and publishing and number one and doing media and professional speaking, that there's always highs and lows in everybody's career. And it's really important, like what you were able to do. I love this journey of how you were doubting yourself, but then you kept going back to the passion that you had to really uplift people. It wasn't about the wins. It was you really feeding into these young men to help them become disciplined and character-driven individuals and faith-based. And I just love that it's the journey. They always talk about that. And this really just shows that. And then it's a real surprise, and it's always exciting to see someone win, especially somebody who's an underdog. And today we've been hearing from Coach Jim Johnson talk about J-Mac, who 20 years ago had a moment in time that the media and the world were crazy about, watching a boy with autism hit and shoot and make 20 points in the last 4 minutes of a game to become just a hero of everybody's hearts. So, and when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more with Coach Jim Johnson, but stay with us to hear from our sponsors.
Reach out to Mary Gardner at marygardner.com. Open doors, build a legacy. Welcome back to the Mary Gardner Show. Now let's get back into the studio. Here's Mary.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. It is Mary Gardner. Hey, if you do want to get in touch with me, my email is mary@marygardner.com. So if you've got ideas for guests or are considering a sponsorship, please reach out to me. It'd be great to hear from you. And today we're talking with a good friend, my friend, Coach Jim Johnson. We just lovingly call him Coach because Coach is a coach, not just for basketball, but in life as well. And Coach, what I love about this story is that J-Mac really was the miracle that night. And you were the miracle for him. And I think that's really part of the lesson, is that sometimes we're waiting for miracles and sometimes we're meant to create them. And so I wanted to ask, because right now, as we talked about earlier, we're in a pretty hard situation with culture. And a lot of the kids are suffering. There's a lot of suicide. There's a lot of depression. Mm-hmm. And so it's a responsibility that we all need to take seriously. We need to check in with each other. How are our neighbors? How are our parents? How are our siblings? Sometimes kids, sadly, have committed suicide and nobody knew that there was anything wrong. So we want to be able to check in and make sure that people are okay that are in our world. But how do we create environments, Coach, that where the underdogs can thrive? Because so often it's the extroverts or the champions and the natural born leaders that are striving and thriving. Tell us about those underdogs. How can we help them thrive as well?
Arts and leadership is that you have to spread love and kindness and show that you care every day for the people that you work with. And I think we should spread that through all our country and through the world. And so that when people feel like they're appreciated and that they're safe, and those are the things that we were trying to build with that culture, is building that environment where people felt like they were being heard and people that felt like they were cared and that we would recognize, and but we'd also correct. And one of the things I always share with leaders is that before you can correct, you need to connect. So I was talking to a group of educators last year, and I kidded them about the three R's, and they were kind of looking, okay, reading, arithmetic, writing. Oh, no, the three R's in leadership is relationships.
That's right. I love that.
You've got to be building those on a daily basis. And when you do that, then you start to build this a culture. Mm-hmm. And with our culture, what we were trying to focus on is that they knew that we loved and cared about them, but we also were very demanding, that we had high expectations and we would challenge our guys every day to be the best they can be. And I think it starts as a leader that you got to model. You got to be, we used to always tell our players, but it started with the coaches, is that you are always on stage. So how you handle adversity, how you can handle both success and defeat are things that are really important, because your people are looking at you. And if you don't handle them very well, then they're not going to handle them very well because you're leading the way. And so being a model and modeling appropriate behaviors is something that I really started to understand in my leadership journey. And I really encourage leaders that they are watching you. Yeah. And if you're leading in a positive way, then they're going to buy that. If you lead in a negative way, they're going to buy that. And that's going to lead in a poor direction.
Absolutely. And I think that people at different ages, especially when they're younger, have different levels of skill and passion and hard work ethic. And so I know in the swim pool, we have group A, B, and C. And so that kind of, we separate each other, and then we all kind of are taught to encourage each other. And so if you're creating this environment where you are an uplifting, instead of, you're doing it wrong, you know, instead of doing that, like, hey, good job on that throw or that free throw. Good job. And really, I think people respond to positive. You talked about it earlier, encouragement. And so right. I think that's really important of a good, inspiring leader who's noticing, who's listening. Because we also hear that younger generation, sometimes they're whining and crying and they want to stay and wallow in their sadness or their traumas. But what you're saying is, yes, you know, we're going to listen to you, but you're going to challenge you too. And I think that's what we need to do as parents. And give me a kind of a look at if there is a kid or child or teen who's struggling, what is a parent supposed to do? Do they just let them go sit on the computer all day and do that? Or how do they get them out and how do they encourage them?
I think it really starts by showing you care. And to me, showing your care means that you are willing to talk to your children. Mm-hmm. And the huge thing is, I always kid leaders, another little acronym is CQA. I think you got to be the chief question asker. Mm-hmm. You got to be, because when you ask questions and you're curious, people go, oh, he really does have an interest in me. And that's really important. And the other thing you talked about, praise, is that two things I'll say. Praise is more powerful when you praise specifically. So, for example, instead if I said, nice job, Johnny. Well, he likes that, but he doesn't really understand why he got that. If I said, Johnny, that was awesome. How you dove on the floor for that loose ball. That's what championship players do on championship teams. Then he's very clear. Mm-hmm. And then I mentioned, you know, as far as the other part, because you do have to correct as a leader, that's why you got to connect first. And part of the connecting is getting to know your people. Yeah. And some people, I could call out in the middle of practice because they didn't do something well and they could handle it and the team learned. But there were other players that didn't handle that well. So that was taking them in a one-on-one and sharing in another way. So I think that's where it's really important as a leader in getting to know your people. Yeah. And so you can inspire and motivate them consistently because you know what makes them tick.
Yes, sir, that's exactly right. And I learned that sometimes for teenagers anyway, they want to talk in the middle of the night. It's really late at night. And I think you just got to suck it up and go and do it because that's when some of the best conversations happen and those bonding moments and that connection happens. So I think as a parent, you always have to be ready. And, you know, in the workforce, the same things apply. Like you can get people involved with projects. And then when you're doing something, oftentimes communication and conversations continue. Have you found that in corporate America that being an encouraging leader also is important?
Absolutely. I think you got to be modeling the behaviors you want to look because you're building a culture. The two things I always talk to leaders about is that you've got to praise what you're looking for and you've got to be able to correct because what you tolerate or ignore, when that starts to slip, you know, it's like the example of a really good restaurant. You go there the first time and, you know, you have a wonderful meal and, you know, the meal is cooked well and it's clean. You know, the bathrooms are clean.
Yeah.
The people that are working with you greet you and they're really nice. And then, you know, you go back there 6 months later and now there's a few crumbs on the table.
Ew.
They don't look very, very nice or the bathrooms aren't very clean. And all of a sudden, then, you know, you see a year later, that business is out of business. Why did it happen?
They didn't watch the little things.
Yeah, they didn't. They started to tolerate things that they should have. And the culture kind of slipped.
And that's important. You got to really pay attention to those details in all things. We're going to take a little side note. Now we've got a section right now, and it's called You Rock.
You Rock. You Rock. You Rock. You Rock. You Rock.
All right, so this is a segment that I started because my brother, who passed years ago, used to tell me all the time, you rock. And Coach, mm-hmm. you and I are talking about encouragement and how important it is. And he would always tell me, Mary, you rock. Go be yourself. Be happy. And so every single show, I dedicate the You Rock section to someone. And today, I am giving this award to my special mother. And so, Mom, I just want to tell you that you rock. And that you are doing fantastic. Mom's been struggling a little bit. Mom's coming up on 95. And so she's a beautiful woman. And she has been the best mom in the world, supporting everybody. And here's her favorite line. Whatever works, Mary. She never puts pressure on people, which I've appreciated so much. And so, Mom, I just want to tell you, you rock. You're my hero. I love you so much. And thank you so much for all that you've done for us and our family. So that's my rock. And you rock. And who's your rock, Coach?
It's hard to pick, so I'm going to do real three quick ones. My dad, was my hero growing up. He was my model. We lost him over a year ago. But I'm also very appreciative. My mom is still going. She's not quite, she's 90, but she's taught me about how to connect with people. And she's a social butterfly. She's out doing things. And then my rock at home is my wife. We've been married 43 years, and she's just always been supportive of all the things I've done. I mean, when I was coaching, I was out of the house a lot, and she never missed a game, and she was just always there for me. And the listening shoulder with the highs and of coaching, and certainly the lows as well.
I love it. I love it. Well, thank you. You got three in there, not just one, but we're about ready to wrap up. But I just wanted to say to every listener today that miracles don't just happen. They are built, and they are built through belief. They're built through encouragement, and they're built through opportunity. And sometimes you are the miracle for someone else, and you may never know. One chance, one word, one moment will unlock in another human being. So believe in miracles every day. Expect them. Create them, because the opportunity can come at any moment, and the next miracle might be sitting quietly on the bench waiting for you. This is Mary Gardner. Coach, thank you so much for being a part of our show today. What's the one last word that you want to have for our listeners today?
I just want to reinforce that, with the strife that's been going through not only our country but the world, is that I want you to think about going out and spreading more kindness, and start by just doing something simple, like give somebody a smile and say hello, open a door for someone. Maybe buy someone lunch, whatever it is, but just do a little gesture of kindness, because I want to see us unite and work together and not divide each other.
Amen, amen, amen. Thank you so much, Coach Jim Johnson, the author of A Coach and a Miracle. And thank you all for being here today to the Mary Gardner Show. Check us out at marygardner.com. And until next time, go create your own miracle. God bless.